Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. You know, I've written a few books. I've mentioned that before. And interestingly enough, I've written books on a variety of topics. I've written some car books, some Michigan history books, and I even wrote a book called American Murder Houses. And the book is what you'd expect. It's about houses around the country where people were murdered. The houses are still standing, and people will go by and gawk at the house because, hey, that's the house where so-and-so got killed. And some of them are quite famous, like the Lizzie Borden house, and some of them are not quite so famous, but I've got a chapter each about 20, 25 houses. And the funny thing is that when people look me up on Amazon, for instance, and they see all the books I've written, and they see this book, a lot of people go, well, Steve, it's kind of an anomaly, it's an outlier, it's not like your other books. And I say, well, you know something, I like to, you know, spread it out and cover a lot of stuff if I can. I'm a guy with many interests. But one thing I can tell you is I did manage to squeeze some legal stuff in here. And it's kind of funny because you might not think of it at first, but if you bumped into an attorney at a cocktail party and he said, by the way, I wrote a book about 25 murder houses around the country, the first question that would probably occur to you is, what are the legal aspects of a murder house? In other words, there's a house, someone got killed there. What about if you go to sell that house now? Or what if you bought the house and didn't know? Because, you know, obviously there are some houses where you wouldn't not know, it seems, to, you know, like the house where Nicole Simpson, the condo where Nicole Simpson got killed along with Ron Goldman out front of. You know, that's one where you think that pretty much you'd figure that out, right? Obviously, if you bought the Lizzie Borden house, you'd probably know that too. But there are houses out there where gruesome murders took place, and the average person who wasn't in that area wouldn't know it. So the question then becomes, like I said, what would happen to you if you were going to sell that house and you didn't disclose it, or you bought the house and didn't find out? And so as a lawyer, I in fact did write an entire chapter on this in my book, American Murder Houses. And it's towards the back, because I admit that not many people are buying this book for this purpose, but I'm pretty sure that this question did arise in the minds of many people as they're reading through here, because when I talk about the houses, I talk about the murder that took place there, what led to the murder, the investigation, did they catch the guy who did it or not, that kind of thing. And then I do talk about the house itself, how big is that, how many rooms has it got, I give the addresses of the house and so on, and I'll talk about some of the history of it, if it's important, as to what's happened to the house in the meantime. You know, it's like, for instance, where Johnny Versace was murdered on the front steps of his mansion in Miami Beach. That house was at one point in time the most expensive piece of real estate in America with respect to a residential home and its listing price. You know, and so it's a fascinating story, but of course, a murder took place there. So it's kind of interesting. But the idea is, if you had a murder house you wanted to sell, or you're buying a house and you found out later it was a murder house, what would the legal impact of that be? So I have to tell you that the most important and the first case you'll find if you start looking into this is out of New York State. And it refers to a stigmatized real estate sale. And that's one of the terms that they've come up with to describe a house that is a murder house. You know, they don't want to say like the murder house rules. They go, the stigmatized real estate. The real estate has a stigma attached to it because of the murder that took place there. And there's a case called Stambofsky versus Ackley. Okay. And in the 1980s, Helen Ackley decided to sell her home in Nyack, New York. And the house is very, very beautiful. But while she had lived there, Ackley had told people that the house was haunted. She wrote an article for Reader's Digest magazine saying the house is haunted. She actually put the house on a haunted house tour of Nyack. So everyone in the community, in the neighborhood understood, oh, that's the haunted house. That's the haunted Ackley house. And so when she went to sell the house to a guy named Jeffrey Stambofsky, she didn't mention to him that the house is haunted, or that she thought it was haunted, or that she had described it as haunted, or that it had been part of a haunted house tour. And so when he bought the house, he put some money down, I think $32,500 as a down payment. He was later told, oh, by the way, that's the old Ackley house, it's haunted. And he sought to back out of that deal, and he filed a lawsuit to get out. The trial court said, no, you can't back out of a deal just because someone said the house is haunted. There's no such thing as ghosts. Ghosts aren't real, right? Well, it turns out the Court of Appeals in New York, the next level up, actually said, you know something? It's actually not a bad argument. And the interesting thing about this is, and I've had people say, wait, Steve, that's a stupid argument. There's no such thing as ghosts. The house isn't haunted. Ah, but if you're buying something, a thing, whether it's a widget or a house, real estate or otherwise, if you're buying something, it's going to have some value. And so the person selling it to you should disclose some things to you about it. And you're buying, you know, you should find certain things out. And if there's something that dramatically affects the value of the house, shouldn't you be told that? And this person had advertised the house as haunted, written about it as haunted. And the question is, let's suppose he bought the house and didn't know that. And he found out later, oh, by the way, that's the old haunted Ackley house. He might have a harder time selling the house because of that. So whether or not it really is haunted, the fact that it had the reputation of being haunted that was promoted by the previous owner seems to be that could be material to the transaction. So the higher court on appeal did not say that, no, he automatically wins the case. They just simply said he can make that argument to a jury, and a jury, if they wanted to, could say, yes, unwind that deal because she did not disclose material facts to the transaction when she should have. So here's the thing. That was the first big case. That's the case that always gets cited, but there are other cases as well. And there's a funny case out of California where a woman named Doris Reed bought a house from Robert King. And as she's moving into the house, she's told by a neighbor that five people have been murdered in the house 10 years earlier. And what's interesting about this is that when Robert King was selling the house, he actually went and told his neighbor, by the way, don't tell her about the gruesome murder. Don't tell her. I don't want her to know. And the interesting thing is that when somebody has a factoid like that that they don't want to share because it might ruin the deal, that's the kind of thing actually the other person's hoping to find out. They want to find out everything they can about this house. So if it's not material, why are you warning neighbors not to tell them? And of course, what happens is they buy the house, they move in, and the neighbors run over to tell them, hey, guess what? Gruesome murder took place here. So that one likewise went up on appeal in California, and a court of appeals said specifically, no, you can make that argument. And again, the issue is, did you suffer any harm, or are you likely to suffer harm because these facts were not disclosed to you? And, you know, like I said, it was so important. He actually warned a neighbor, don't tell her about the murders. Interestingly enough, the Court of Appeals jokingly pointed out how it always seems to be the case that neighbors are the ones who run over to tell the story. Guess what? You guys just bought a murder house. So, you know, in this field of stigmatized homes being sold, there are actually some professors who did some math on this. And that's the kind of thing you wonder. But it's amazing. You'll find out there are people out there who've studied everything, anything. You name it, they've studied it. And two guys actually got together and tracked real estate sales involving stigmatized homes, most of which were murder houses. And it's James Larson and Joseph Coleman. They refer to these as psychologically impacted houses. Now, the houses don't have a psychology to impact, but it's obviously the houses impact the psychology of the people who buy and sell them. And again, these houses have no physical defects. They simply have a history to them, quite often a gruesome history. And, you know, some of these stories, the Villisca axe murder house in Iowa, where a bunch of people were brutally bludgeoned with an axe, you know. Now, that house is actually now a tourist attraction specifically because of that. But that's the kind of house that if you found out later, oh, by the way, a bunch of people were chopped up in this room, that might give you the willies. And the willies is a legal term. Look it up. So they did some studies on actual murder houses, and they determined that a home that's been stigmatized like this sells for about 2.5% less than a non-stigmatized house. Now, you might say, wait, 2.5%? That's almost statistically insignificant. 2.5%. But that's really not the problem. They discovered that the real problem was these homes took 50% longer to sell. So if you've got a stigmatized house and you disclose it, you'll get 97.5 cents on the dollar for it, but it's going to take you 50% longer to sell it. It's going to sit on the market for longer. And one of the things that the guys pointed out was that while it's sitting on the market, it's going to depend on how well-known the crime is. So another guy who studies this, he's an appraiser. His name is Randall Bell, and he actually specializes in appraising murder houses. I kid you not. Bell says a gruesome, well-publicized murder generally lowers a selling price by 15 to 35%. So the well-publicized, gruesome murder in your house, it's going to knock the value down. Now, that might not be the biggest of your worries if you're the murder victim, but it's something to think about. On the other hand, if it's out in the middle of nowhere and the murder doesn't make CNN and Nancy Grace isn't screaming about it for 6 months straight, maybe it won't affect it all that much. So the average is the price is going to drop a little bit, but it's going to be in the market longer. Jokingly, he says that if you've got a problem with one of these, try to sell it to somebody from out of town. Now, just because you think I've gone as far with this as I can, I'm going to tell you right now, there are actually real estate agents who specialize in selling psychologically impacted houses or stigmatized properties. One is Barry Lebo, who's based in Toronto, and he runs a popular seminar called, I'm not making this up, Selling the Haunted House, Realtor Disclosure. He says his motto is, disclose unto others what you want disclosed unto you. And he says that, he told CNN that a murder house in a small town might be near impossible sale. In that case, he suggests, sell it to somebody from the city. He's joking, of course. Now, here's the thing. If you've got a widespread problem, and it could be nationwide, and it involves realtors, and realtors are worried about whether they're going to get hit with something, what do you do? Well, you approach the legislature, and you get some bills passed. You pass some laws. And you might ask, wait a second, Steve, we're going to pass laws? What are we going to do, outlaw murder homes? No, no, no. Murder is already illegal. I believe in most states. I don't know about Louisiana. Joking. But they actually have passed laws in several states that protect real estate salespeople and brokers who do not disclose that a property has been stigmatized. So in other words, you go to list the home and the broker goes out and does whatever they do and they bring a buyer to the table and you sell the house. The broker can't get sued for that if you didn't disclose. You can get sued, but the broker can't. But it depends on the state. Some states have got other laws as well. But there are laws on the books in half of the states of America that deal with stigmatized property. Okay, so if you are in a home that a murder took place in, you might want to double check the laws in your state before you go to sell your house. Okay, and so the interesting thing though is, as often happens, different locales actually tailor the laws to their own state and their own situations. So Nevada says that you can also get in trouble for selling a stigmatized property if you fail to disclose that the house had been previously used as a meth lab. Apparently, that's a problem in Nevada. They should do a TV show about that. Okay. Some states do actually require that you disclose a murder house's status, but only under limited circumstances. So, for instance, in California, a seller only needs to inform a buyer of a death that has occurred on the property in the 3 years preceding the sale. So in other words, if someone got murdered in the house 4 years ago, you're good to go. 2.5 years ago, you might want to disclose. 3 years ago, push the closing back a week. And just to make these cases more confusing, as I point out, some states protect brokers and real estate agents who do not disclose, but still leave the seller open to lawsuits. So, you know, common law fraud, common law misrepresentation is what we're talking about before these laws exist. And if you're in a transaction with somebody and you know material facts, facts that are material to the transaction, and you do not disclose them knowing that the other side expects the disclosure, and this is going to vary slightly from state to state, you might get in trouble for that later if it's found out. Now, the funny thing is that the arguments that have been made by these sellers in the past had always been, who cares? Houses aren't haunted. And the fact that somebody died in a house, people die in houses all the time. But the point is that they knew that if they disclosed this stuff, it was going to screw up the deal. So they actually knew that they should have disclosed that stuff. So, you know, again, like I said, murder houses, it's a strange thing. I've had people ask me and say, Steve, you know, because the book has actually sold very well. People say, Steve, why does the book sell so well? What's the fascination that Americans have with murder houses? And I said, you know, it's strange because we are fascinated by crime. Look at all the crime shows on TV. Look at all the police procedurals on TV. you know, people are getting killed left and right on primetime television, network television in America. So we're fascinated by the concept of murder. But, you know, we hear about a murder on TV or we hear about it in the news or whatever. And we didn't see it happen. We didn't, you know, we heard about it. But when you're driving down the street and somebody goes, oh, that's the house. That's the house where that murder took place. It makes it real. And it ties us to the story because we can actually see the setting. That's the setting where that took place. And, you know, it's interesting because some of the murder houses are gone. I mentioned the, you know, the Helter Skelter murders of Charles Manson. And there were actually three different houses involved in that. But the one house in the middle is gone now because, the house where Sharon Tate was murdered along with the other people. That house has been bulldozed and another house put up in its place. But I included it because I talked about the Gary Hinman house and the LaBianca house. And so I talked about all three of those and I kind of had to mention the one in the middle, even though the house is gone now. But a lot of the houses do get knocked down. I've had people complain and say, Steve, you didn't cover, you know, John Wayne Gacy, for instance. You know, you didn't talk about John Wayne Gacy. Well, the house is gone. The house is gone. You know, they knocked the house down, dug the property up and, you know, investigated it and house is gone. So I limited myself to houses that are still standing. But, you know, I don't know if anybody drives down the street to look at the place where John Wayne Gacy's house used to be. But I do know that people do drive down the streets where these other houses are. And I interviewed a lot of people for this book, a lot of people. And some of the stories I found even surprising after doing the research where people told me about, you know, the traffic years later. And I tell the story in the introduction to the book about how I went to Miami Beach with a friend of mine to go look at the Johnny Versace house. And the house is not labeled in any meaningful way. There's an address, but there's basically a tall wrought iron fence around the property. And you can see part of the house, but from a distance. And we were across the street and I was trying to take a good photograph of the house. And the entire time we were there, we'd see people walk up, they check the address, they look at a piece of paper and make sure they have the right address, and they look at it again, and they take a picture in front of the gates. And that, of course, is about 5 feet from where he was shot. And now, people might be coming by just to take a photograph in front of the house where Johnny Versace lived, or they might be taking a photograph in front of the house because it's a big house. But I suspect that most of them were drawn to that story because they'd heard of the crazy case of, you know, Andrew Cunanan and how he killed Johnny Versace on the front steps of that house. So, you know, when I was looking at that, I believe it was, you know, 15, 20 years later. It was a while later. So, you know, there is something that fascinates us as humans about this. But again, talking today about the legal aspects of it, if you've got a murder house, you might want to disclose. And if you're buying a house, you might want to do some research and maybe even ask if you have some facts that suggest that that might have happened there. But who knows? You might get a good deal too. Questions or comments, put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.